back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. I'm joined now by Brandon Scott, the 52nd mayor of Baltimore City, for our series called On the Stoop with the Mayor. Mayor Scott is a frequent guest on our show. He was before he was the mayor, so I'm just happy to have you back. How are you, Mayor Scott?
I'm doing great, Dr. K. I'm doing well. I hope you and your family and all your listeners are doing well.
We are doing well. And let me just begin by congratulating you. I spoke to you before you were inaugurated. So let me just say, I've been watching very closely what you've been doing, and I'm really excited about all the changes that you're making. I'm excited about your commitment, but I especially love the video of you out with the Baltimore ceasefire, picking your hair with the wooden pick for men, taking care of your fro before you started marching. I said, that is classic Baltimore, which is why people love what you're doing.
Erica got me good. I had just gotten her up for saying something, and then I turned my back, and I knew I should never, ever, ever put my guard down around her. And next thing I know, she had a full-on video of me fucking up my fro.
I love it. I love it. And so, you know, I just want to say what's great about you as mayor, and I think what's great for our city is that young children, young boys and girls of Baltimore City can look at you and they can see themselves. So I appreciate that you are remaining in touch with the community in such a way that they feel like, you know, that could be me one day.
No, yeah, it's an awesome thing. And, you know, for me, being out there with the folks from Ceasefire and We Are Us and Safe Streets and all those other groups, as you know, that's where I come from.
Yeah.
And it's about making sure that you remain grounded, remain connected to the community, but most importantly, accessible, especially for those young people. I spoke to the young ladies at Lily May today and just saw and heard from them about how I know our better days are ahead because they are coming and they have a belly full of fire for Baltimore.
And now before I get to the serious topics, because I know people are on the edge of their seat for some of the serious topics, I do have to tell you my last personal favorite, right? I love the Afro, definitely love that, but I really love the video of you walking in and getting Devin Allen's gear, his love letter to Baltimore, the Devin Allen collection of Under Armour, which is just absolutely fascinating to think about him as a photographer putting our images on the cover of Time magazine, and now, of course, here he is with his own collection.
Yeah, listen, Devin is a good brother of mine. Devin and I met back when we were doing 300 Men March, and he was taking pictures and just followed his work and his career. And I think for me, I had to be there, right? Because think about it. I was telling one of my staff members yesterday how I had to actually go back, Dr. K, after I bought my shoes because I got them a size too small, and I had to go back. And when I went to do my exchange on Saturday, they was like, oh, Mr. Mayor, we're going to have to give you a 10.5 or one of the shoes off of display. And I was like, that's fine, because in my mind, that meant that so many people, and I saw folks,
yes,
Stokey, other folks, people I went to high school with, going down there and buying Devin's shoe. Devin, as I said to him, he's the first person from Baltimore not to be in the NBA to have his own
business.
And we have to support him to uplift that message. And think about it, when every time we see Steph Curry hit a three from 30 feet, that line, that signature line in that shoe came from a West Baltimore boy. That's something that we should be proud of and that we should support him in his great work.
I love it. I absolutely love it. So now with all of that out the way, I want to kind of pull in some of the things that people are most concerned with onto the table. And so I want to start with what's happening with COVID-19. You sent a letter to Johnson & Johnson, and we're aware, because I've been talking about this entire hour, about the fact that Black people in this country, more generally, and then Black people in this state, and then Black people in this city, very specifically, are not getting access to the vaccine in the same way as our white counterparts. Can you talk about what the clog is, and then what you're planning to do about it?
Yeah, listen, this is exactly why I wrote that letter. And it's not just about the letters of Johnson & Johnson, Dr. K. It's also about the letter that I wrote to the governor directly. Because we know here in the city, and for Johnson & Johnson to be making, have that vaccine being made here, we think that it is only right that we able to get those 300 doses because Baltimoreans should benefit from something that is made here by Baltimoreans. And to date, nearly 44,000 first doses have been administered by a combination of City Health Department and our 11 hospital partners. But we know less than 20% of those doses have been distributed to the city's health department. And the state doesn't allow us and gives us limited visibility into what we can see from our partners. And that's where the inequity comes in. And it's not that our hospital partners and other folks are not doing what they should do in vaccinating their people, in the stages that we're in. But it's about, and this is not just a Baltimore thing. And I want everyone to hear me very clearly on this, Dr. K. This is the state of Maryland thing. It's about right. the amount of doses that are not coming to the local health departments who have the better relationship with the community. We know that Dr. Geraza believes in equity, knows that we have to reach our senior population. That's why we announced yesterday our mobile strategy in partnership with our local health care partners to go out and directly impact seniors in our black and brown communities. They started in Cherry Hill, in Cherry Hill Senior Homes last Friday, because we know what we have to do. The problem now is we are not getting the amount of vaccine that allows for us to utilize those resources. And that's not just a problem for me. It's a problem in Baltimore County. We heard from yesterday on a call with Senator Van Hollen, myself, many county leaders around the state. The folks in Caroline County and Eastern Shore were talking about how Walmart in their jurisdiction is giving doses to people from Delaware. This system itself is a problem. We know that people, older folks, black folks, there's a digital divide here in the city. They don't have access to the internet. We have a wraparound for us here, but even that phone number, that's an extra step. We need to have more vaccine. We need to have more visibility in what the other partners are doing. And that's why I decided to say, okay, it's my job as the mayor of the city to try to figure out how I can have the greatest impact and made a direct reach out to them to hopefully we'll hear back from them. I'm very optimistic about that, so that then we can further have conversations with the federal government of us about how we can make sure that we're having an equitable vaccine distribution.
So let's talk about what's happening with the payroll system, because we had someone on from the Baltimore City Fire Department and just expressing the concerns that people are having with the payroll system. What's the update on that?
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. And let me first state, Dr. K, as you know, and I know that they know, that this was a decision that predated me. It's something, one of the things that I inherited. But also, I want to be very clear. It's unacceptable that we're seeing the issues that we see with folks' pay. I know my staff and myself have made sure that the Department of Finance, Department of Human Resources are clear about what's happening and giving them direction to fix that issue and to not rest until employees are made whole and the issues we face now with work, they are corrected. Over time, we're seeing issues less and less off-cycle checks that we have had to make. But we also have to also, Dr. K, and I know you'll know about this, honor the fact that moving the city away from paper timesheets that led to overtime fraud and gun trace task force and other things is a necessary thing. I cannot speak to what the last administration did or did not do to troubleshoot some anticipated challenges and prepare city employees for this new system. But moving forward, that's exactly what I've directed my folks to do, to work around the clock to correct these issues with implementation, ensure that employees are paid what they are due. I actually met personally myself, the city administrator, the deputy city administrator, with all the union representatives last week to hear their concerns directly and work. And they're working together to see. We created a hotline for them, all of these things, to make sure that we're doing everything in our power to make sure that folks get paid while we work to implement this new system and fix all the challenges.
And we want to ask folks to give us a call at 410-319-8888 if you have a question for our On the Stoop series with the mayor. And you can put your questions up on Facebook Live. I have a question here for you, Mayor Scott, from Ingrid. Ingrid wants to know, because of the sudden and quite suspicious concern for black and brown children's education as it's being professed, are the disparities being addressed? And I think she's specifically talking about the state of the buildings. Now, I know you, education doesn't fall under your purview, but you're the mayor, so in a sense, it all falls under you.
Yeah, so actually, I met with teachers and the union leadership next week. I'm going to be meeting with the school system and Dr. Santa Lisa's in the coming weeks. Delaying for 2 weeks was the right thing to do. I understand why the CEO wants and has that sense of urgency. We know that the education our students are receiving during this pandemic is very challenging. I hear directly Dr. K from young people consistently about, I got asked that question again today about what they should do to try to keep some of their classmates motivated who are struggling with the virtual learning for many different reasons. We understand that, but we also have to make sure that we're prioritizing the health and safety of folks. This is why I worked with the folks at Hopkins and our other hospital partners to prioritize teachers and getting that vaccine. Is why in my letter to the governor, in addition to prioritizing the 15,000 senior older adults who requested a vaccine in Baltimore, I asked for them, in addition to our educators, to be prioritized at the mass vac site that the state has uplifted in the city, and going to continue to push to make sure we are doing everything that we can in my power and advocate for other things as well.
Well, let's talk about homicides in Baltimore City. I know we've all been focused, as we should be, on the impact of this devastating virus on our community and on our city, but we're still dealing with the problem of homicides. We know it's a twindemic. Like, we've all been talking about that. And I would even argue that it goes even beyond a twindemic, because we got to bring the economy in as that third leg. But talk about what you're doing to
and
address
overdose.
That.
Yeah, so we know right now, Dr. K, you know that for me, it's like a quadruple-demic when you add in the amount of folks that we lose from overdose as well.
Yeah.
We know that right now we have a slight reduction in homicides, but that's not enough for me. Actually, I'm coming from a two-hour police stat meeting with the police department about what they and their department is doing on their portion of dealing with violent crime in Baltimore. We know recently from and how we're looking at it, and you'll be hearing more about that. You know that I created the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement, Director Shantae Jackson, who I know you know very well from her work at community mediation, but also with the consent decree, is leading that effort. And what she'll be doing is overseeing the overarching comprehensive public safety strategy for the city as she builds that office out, because it won't be just about policing. It will be about every agency. It will be about building people, not just about law enforcement. But we will also make sure that the law enforcement arm is focused on what they need to be focused on in a constitutional way, making sure that they are meeting the needs of our consent decree. And for them, we know that continuously, Dr. K, we have the same folks who are committing the same acts of violence over and over again. And what they're going to be held accountable to is how they're interacting with those people. In particular, something that's alarming to me, Dr. K, is that we are seeing a lot of incidents of violence that are domestic, related to domestics. And when you see this kind of stuff, I know you may have seen a video from me a few weeks ago after a homicide involving something domestic, where I said, listen, you don't own her. You don't own him. And we have to make sure that we are getting that message out to people, because people should not be dying simply because their lover or ex-lover moved on to someone else. They should not be dying over simple conflict. We have to deal with that, how we're going to resolve our conflict in a different way. But we also have to deal with the flow of guns and holding people accountable for bringing them into the city as well. I am not satisfied by a long shot. A small reduction is not enough for me, because we have to get to a place where we are seeing more significant reductions, and we will do that not just through policing and having them focus. You know that we also reduce these the zones that they were going to be focused in. You and I know if we want them focused on the violent repeat offenders, as folks say, we should not have our police officers at 41st and Falls saying that, oh, this is where violence happens, because you and I know violence doesn't happen there.
Right.
People don't get shot and killed there, but there are communities in our neighborhoods that need that. That right level, not the over-policing, the right level of policing, and that's what we're going to be focused on.
Now, Mel had a question. He said, you recently joined the Mayors for Guaranteed Income. Does that mean that we're going to see the paychecks?
No, it'll be, so we, yes, I did join Mayors for Guaranteed Income. How this works, when it'll be a pilot. And we'll be piloting with a specific group of people. The next step is us to have a committee that decides that. That's how it works through Mayors 4. And you should, guys, just stay tuned for more information. But we will be piloting it. This is something that I had to keep my mouth closed about Dr. K for quite some time. This started with my good friend Michael Tubbs, the former mayor of Stockton, California. So we've known that we were going to join this from the day that I said I was running for mayor, but we just had to wait to announce it and do it in a proper fashion. But we will have a guaranteed income pilot here in the city, focused on folks that we know need, so that we can look at it like the other cities on the data of the folks that need the assistance and the help to show how we'll help across the country.
Well, we have Donna on the phone. Donna's from Baltimore, Mayor Scott, and she has a question. Donna, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well.
I'm in school and studying behavior and mental health, and some of the biggest problems that I see in the crime issues are not just poverty and precipitates the crime.
Dr. K, I can't hear you guys.
Oh, okay. Hold on one second, Donna. Hold on one second. Hold on. Let's see if we can fix Mayor Scott's phone. Mayor, can you hear me, sir?
I can hear you, but I can't hear the caller. You.
Okay. So what we'll do, Donna, why don't you, Justina, get Donna's question, and then I'll ask it. I'll do it that way. So I want to make sure that we're making good use of your time. You released a statement today, a whole report. Can you talk about the report you released? Because I only saw pages 1 and I think 7 online.
Yeah. So the full transition report is available online, Dr. K. The transition report is a result of a intentionally selected team led by a non-member steering committee that I knew would be able to offer bold, actionable solutions to the city's most pressing problems. The members, it included every committee, had young people on it, community advocates, current and former government officials, academics, artists, business community members, more than 250 Baltimoreans in total. And this a transition effort like this, Dr. K, isn't easy. It requires everyone involved to think critically about the future of the city and respect the roles in it. It urges us all to do not only what is current, but in pointing out existing challenges, but to do what's hard, identify solutions to those challenges. And this is a great report. I'm looking forward to using these short and long-term recommendations as a guide as we move the city forward. But, Dr. K, I just have to thank every single person who was involved in that transition committee, but I would be very remiss if I didn't at this time uplift and for everyone and dedicate that this report being put out at this point to the loss of my brother and my great friend, Dante Barksdale, who was a member of the Public Safety Committee on my transition team.
Yes, he has definitely missed the work that he did in this city. Will not be in vain. People are picking up the ball and they are running with it. I thought it was very hopeful this weekend when I was tracking the work of Baltimore Ceasefire and how Erica Bridge was putting out saying, hey, 3 days, 4 days, that we need to have more of a light shed on the fact that Baltimore City is moving in a different direction. How do you help people to realize that? And there's people from outside the city that when they want to paint our picture, they only start and end with the wires, all they have.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Dr. K. I think a couple of things. One, as the leader of the city, I have to do what we haven't had really since Mayor Schaefer, and that's be the city's number one cheerleader. Never will I shy away from the issues that we have to tackle, but I'm also going to beat my chest about all the great things and the great people and all the great actions that happen in our city every day. We have to stop letting HBO or whoever is filming in Baltimore at the time to dictate what our image is. We know the problems that we have, but we also know the greatness that happens in Baltimore each and every day, and that's what we have to do. But we also, Dr. K, have to meet those challenges and start to deal with them and solve those issues. No, they're not going to go away overnight, or no, one elected official term is not going to rid the city of all its problems. But you're talking about building a foundation and seeing actionable change and actionable steps taken to make a city a better place. And that's what it's about. And that's about doing the things that need to be done in order to see people see Baltimore in a different way.
So with that in mind, if you could, take us through, I want you to look out a little bit, go to the end of your first term. Just how are you specifically committed to moving the two Baltimores to one Baltimore? Now, you and I both, now I am, new to the city, been here only, 17 years. I'm still new in Baltimore terms. I've learned about you Baltimoreans. 17 years means I just got here, right? But I've often heard about the two Baltimores. I've seen the two Baltimores. How do you bring those two Baltimores together? Like, what would you like to have accomplished that will remove that space between the, quote, two Baltimores?
Well, I think the first and most important thing, Dr. K, is that we have to start to serve and invest in Baltimore as it is one. And I think that's something that hiring our first chief equity officer in Dana Moore and pushing the city towards and fully enacting my equity law is going to be a huge thing in that. And that whole work won't be done in one term. But this is about you, and I talked to you about this before. And when you think about city government, I always tell folks, my term is about building the foundation of a better Baltimore. The house, as we know, was broken, and the structure at the foundation had cracks all throughout. We have to build it new from the bottom up. And I'm at the bottom of that. And me being the person that's putting the foundational bricks, the foundational sturdiness on the house known as a better and one and complete Baltimore, is just important as that young person that I speak to at some school now that'll come behind me 10, 15, 20 years from now who put the shiny new dome on top of the house. And that's what this is about, making the investments to do the things the right way, changing the policies that allow for that to happen. That's what this term is about, and that's how we will work to bring in Baltimore together.
Well, I have Donna's question here. Donna has a question, Mayor Scott, about intergenerational poverty. And she says that the core issues start with the mental health issues between the mother and the child, which are not being faced or heard. She said we need a commission of these women and others to get to the core of the violence, which stems from poverty. In the plans that you've laid out, do you have anything set aside that specifically gets to the root of intergenerational poverty?
Yeah, a few things. One, when you talk about our guaranteed income pilot, that's a big part of that, dealing with the intergenerational poverty. We're also, we're fully going to implement the Elijah Cummings Healing City Act and dealing with mental health in a different way. We know that we also are focusing on, again, you see there this plan to divert calls away from police and put them in the hands of folks that need it, including our behavioral health clinicians that know how to tackle those things, but also investing in neighborhoods and people that have been disinvested in. All of those things, Dr. K, play a role in what Donna's talk about, an issue that we know that we have to begin to tackle now.
We have Kevin on the phone. Let me see if we can get another call on here, Mayor Scott. Kevin from Baltimore, how are you?
Hello, Dr. K?
Yes, let's see if Mayor Scott. Mayor Scott, can you hear Kevin?
I think I can.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, Kevin. Yeah, I can hear him, Doctor. I can hear him.
Yes, Mayor. I'm not snitching. I'm just get that clear. But these police riding around in the cars, and none of them are on the beat. Meaning, a lot of people got firearms on them. I know we got rights, and you just can't come at us any kind of way. But if you can get a lot of these police out these cars, and then maybe get the supervisor where he rides around, but we need to get the police back on beat. Can you give me some input on that?
Thank you so much, Kevin. And what I'm going to do, Mayor Scott, let me just repeat Kevin's question just in case. But Kevin was specifically talking about police officers sitting in their cars rather than walking the beat like they did when we were growing up. Do you have a plan to get the police officers out of the cars and get them on the foot beat?
Yes, actually, Kevin, I'm glad you said that. It's about having them truly invest and believe in community policing. We know that we have to develop community policing plans. Actually, we were just talking about that in their police stat about how we're going to be tracking those kind of engagements and making sure that folks are doing that. But it's also, and this is what, Dr. K, I'm going to need you and all your listeners to understand when you hear me talk about it in the future, and in some cases the near future. We also have to alleviate some of the calls for service that we as citizens are putting in as 911 emergencies that are not 911 emergencies, so that we can allow and really force our police officers through that extra time that they have to be proactively walking out in communities, meeting people like they did back in the day. So there are things that we right now put into 911 that other cities would not take in as a 911 emergency police call and will handle them in a different way. And we're going to be doing those things, and we're going to need everyone to understand that we have to alleviate that call burden for things that they should not be responding to in an emergency fashion if we want to see the community engagement that we want.
Can you give me an example? So just so I can understand, what, people are locked out their house, they call the cops, there's a problem with their car, things like that.
I mean, they run the gamut. The most egregious one that I've ever seen, and I'm going to say this because if folks think I'm lying, they can go watch the movie, was actually captured in the Charm City documentary, where someone called 911 for loud music, and it actually was a kid's marching band practice.
Oh, come on.
Or another one was on there where a lady, you know, she asked the police officer what help with Facebook because her husband was cheating on her with some lady on Facebook.
I shouldn't be laughing.
Yeah. There are so many calls like that, and even some other ones where, you know, it would be easier in many places, Charlotte and others, it would be easier, like if, you know, someone threatened you online or something like that, right? They take those phone calls over the phone or the reports. They get the reports over the phone or online. They don't send a lot by the officer to that. Those are the kind of things that we have to think about as we go through this phase because, as you know, when I was a young kid, when 911 first came out, it was for emergencies only. And culturally, over the years, we've gotten away from that.
All right, let me see if I can get one more call on here, Mayor Scott. We have Stuart on the phone. Stuart, you are live with the mayor.
Hi, good evening, everybody.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask, were we getting the parking forgiveness this year? Because I'm 60 years old, I got a couple tickets for parking in my neighborhood.
All right. Thank you so much. So, Mayor Scott, I think Stuart is asking the question that I want to know the answer to. He's asking, will we receive any kind of parking forgiveness? He got a $50 ticket in his community. Like, where do we stand on things like that when people are still trying to recover or still dealing with the impact of the economy as a result of COVID-19?
Well, I mean, listen, we know that everyone is hurting, and we know that the city itself, we are looking at a $30 million plus deficit as well. We're going to be looking at all the things that we can do to help our citizens, but we also have to be reminded that as a city, unlike the federal government, we can't have an unbalanced budget. And it's a tough time for everyone. We're going to be looking at ways to help our citizens in every way that we can.
Will that include the work that is being done that I read about, that they're putting up more red light cameras, maybe the work done to bring that down just a little bit?
Well, those are going up. And I will say, Dr. K, that it's funny that folks with the cameras, it's either they love or they hate them. Because when I go to community meetings, I get asked why they don't have one. Of course, some other folks don't like them. But it's also, in particular, I think I will uplift, too, that to remember that we are dictated to by the state where they can go, but more importantly, where the money can go. This is not something that the city can decide where the money is spent. It is told to us by state law. And in fact, you know, when you think about some of the things where, for example, we know the amount of accidents on I-83 with folks who are driving into the city and how the resources that it caused the city to drain. We can't even put one right there, even though we know it will be a big impact on safety. So those are some of the things that we're pushing for as well, because we're not allowed to say where the resources go from them.
Well, thank you so much, Mayor Brandon Scott, the 52nd mayor of Baltimore. Folks, this is the kickoff to our On the Stoop series with Mayor Scott. He will be joining us once a month to talk through what is happening. Thank you, Mayor Scott, as always, sir.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man.
So, folks, we're going to leave it here. Make an appointment. Meet me back here tomorrow at 3 p.m. Let's have another conversation that matters.